welcome to this week's episode of Information Week Live for the week of August 9th, 2015. I'm Executive Editor Dave Wagner, sitting in for our usual host, Kurt Franklin. Kurt has flown to Silicon Valley to convince Google that Kurt Franklin Enterprises has a much better ring to it than Alphabet. But even though Kurt isn't here, I've got a great panel. Joining me are a dark reading editor and all-around good egg, Sarah Peters. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you for having me, Dave.
And also we have iWeek editor and queen of all things Microsoft, Kelly Sheridan. Welcome, Kelly.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
Good. I'm glad you both are here. Well, Kelly, I think it's obvious, even though you're our queen of Microsoft, the news this week was really dominated by Google, who you also cover from time to time, changing their name to Alphabet, reorganizing the company with this new holding company. Is this just rearrangement for fun, or do you see any sort of real reason for doing this, Kelly?
I can see why they did it, because Google has itself spread to try and touch on every aspect of the technology industry, and it seems like it's trying to juggle so much that it almost doesn't make sense to do some kind of separation. And it'll be interesting to see what Larry and Sergey decide to focus on with the Google X Ventures and what comes of that. I didn't see it coming, but now that it has happened, I can see why they did it.
Right. I have to say it took, I think, almost everybody by surprise. I think people were really sort of accepting of the idea that Google could just, you know, go into cars or go into healthcare without any sort of issue. But it seems like our Tom Claiborne wrote that one of the reasons why they're doing this is so, like, if Google cars crash, it doesn't affect Google the company, because Alphabet is a different company now, and Google cars are a different company from Google search. Do you think that's a fair thing to say, or do you think that's Tom being a little cynical?
Well, I think it's a precaution, and obviously a lot of the new ventures that Alphabet is going to be diving into will involve some risk, and is it fair to have that risk affect the entire, if it was just Google, is it fair to have all of that risk splash back on Google as a whole, or kind of like let some of the company be safe from whatever different projects they decide to explore? If that makes any sense.
Yeah, fair enough. Sarah, I know security is your real expertise, but I also know that you've covered a wide variety of IT and leadership issues. Did this catch you off guard, and what do you think? Is it a good move, or you know, rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic?
It did catch me off guard, particularly when I read, when the New York Times kind of broke the story, there was a line that struck me that, for Larry Page, the decision to shake up Google's structure was driven by the desire to reinvigorate the company with an entrepreneurial culture. And that cracked me up, because I thought, if anybody had a entrepreneurial culture, it was Google. Like, if you compare Google to pretty much any other company in technology of that size, they were not the ones who seemed like they needed to shake things up and get moving and create new products or anything. So I was surprised that was the supposed inspiration for this maneuver. But what Kelly said, I think, and what Tom said, makes a lot of sense, that if they do want to move into completely new kind of ventures, they'll be, Google as it is right now, will be protected from the potential failures from those other things, which is the whole kind of point of entrepreneurship. You want to be able to accept failure, which is not something that most businesses are built for these days. So it's going to be fun to watch. I don't know what to expect, but it's definitely going to be fun to watch.
Well, you raise a really excellent point, I think. I mean, Google's whole 80-20 thing, you know, you spend 80% of your time on your real job and 20% on these amazing ideas. I mean, like, that's the sort of heart of the way every innovative company thinks now. And they're trying to say that that's not enough, that they have to do even more to be entrepreneurial, which is special. It's very nice, but one wonders if it's genuine and sincere or whether they have other reasons. So with that in mind, I'll ask both of you, but I'll start with Sarah. One of the things that interests me about this is that Larry and Sergey both are essentially stepping away from the day-to-day operations of Google. There's a new Google CEO, and they're looking at the business as a whole. Now, I'm sure they're going to be involved heavily in Google. But, Sarah, do you think of this as them abandoning Google, saying basically we've outgrown Google, we're not interested in Google anymore, we're interested in this car, we're interested in solving death, as they so eloquently put it with Calico. Do you think they're just moving on and this is a way to move on without making the investors just totally freak out?
Yeah. I know that sounds blunt, but
yeah,
I
fair
think
enough.
They've been there, they've done that, they want to play with something else, and they're going to see how this goes. And I think if everything starts collapsing and things start blowing up back at Google, then they'll probably sweep in and try to save the ship. But my guess is that they want new toys, and that's why they're doing this. And they've done enough on Google, and they're just not as interested anymore.
Okay, fair
could be
enough.
Wrong,
I agree with
but
you.
I doubt
Kelly,
it.
Do you agree too?
I would agree with that. Yeah, I think they're kind of just. I don't want to say bored, but that's exactly what it is. Like, they want to move on to the next big thing, and now they have all these different cool projects that they can explore, so why spend all their time working on all of their old stuff? And Google obviously still needs to exist. That's how they're making their money. But for two people who created this giant innovative company, it's easy to see why when they see all of this new opportunity, they would kind of just put someone else in charge of the old company and move on to the next big thing.
Right. Okay. Well, that begs the question before we move on to other big things. Is this going to work? Is Google going to be fine without Larry and Sergey? What do you think, Kelly?
I'm mostly curious about why this is happening now and what is kind of going on over at Alphabet and what kind of different projects they're working on that have prompted this separation. You know, like, what had to happen, or like, what are they working on that made them take their attention away from Google and like towards Alphabet? You know what I mean?
Right. Like, did they make a breakthrough that they're really excited about that we don't know about? That's
exactly
the next point. But it also dodged the question. So I'm going to turn to Sarah and ask, because I can always count on Sarah to say it. Is this going to work, or is Google going to fall apart now, Sarah?
Yeah, I don't know.
I tend to think that when you are a company that is as big as Google is, Google is humongous, and it has also proven to be quite nimble. And I don't think you can do that unless you are a pretty well-organized ship with not just a master of the universe type leader, but you know, just kind of directing everybody. You've got to have a lot of people, you know, throughout middle management all the way to the very bottom who can execute stuff without being given direct orders from the tippy-tippy top all the time. So I have to think that it's organized enough to run itself without those guys at the very top as the overlords. I have to imagine it's going to be okay. But, you know, I'm more of the I'm more of a technology chick than I am a business chick, so I could be totally wrong, and this whole thing could blow up in my face next week. And if it does, I'm going to pretend I never said any of this, and just, you know, play dumb.
Well, if it does, you can count on me to bring it up next week.
I know you will, Dave.
But no, I think you make a lot of sense. And the fascinating thing to me about it is that Google doesn't have the reputation that, say, GE had in the 80s and 90s of being the CEO factory, that people went to GE, became a CEO of a division, and then went on and became a CEO of another company. We've only seen that once so far, to my knowledge, which is Marissa Meyer at Yahoo. Maybe
right.
Google's just a young company. Maybe they'll have more of this. But you're right. It's interesting. Google does not have, what with all of its pluses, Google does not have a reputation for developing leadership. So I think that's a fine point. With that point, why don't we move on to something else before we all get Googled out or Google erases us from the internet for talking about it. Kelly, you had another story about another big-time mobile company, Apple, this week. Tell me a little bit
about
Apple is actually trying to get into the enterprise a little bit.
Yeah, which I thought was very interesting because, as you know, I normally cover Microsoft. I've had sales, like all tablet sales, are not doing so well and haven't been doing well since 2014, I think, first quarter, the iPad peaked. So now Tim Cook and the Apple team is trying to pick up sales. And to do that, they're looking towards the enterprise, which was kind of supported by some Gartner research that said business tablet use is going to go up by 2020, and consumer use is kind of fluctuating because a tablet isn't really like a must-have device. It's more like you use it if you need it. So what Apple is doing is something that's been referred to within the company as the Mobility Partner Program, and it's partnering with more than 40 technology firms to create apps for it. So these partner companies are working with Apple to develop iOS apps specifically for business. And Apple is reviewing these apps and telling them to make changes and encouraging all of these partner companies to build apps that integrate and work together to create more detailed offerings for business users. And inviting these partner companies to talk at their sales conference, and Apple is asking the companies to train their employees on these apps. So it's a really big endeavor, and obviously Apple has shrouded it in secrecy, and some of the companies like don't even know all the partners involved. So there are a lot of very vague details, but the Wall Street Journal came out with the original report, and they were the ones who kind of fleshed everything out. So, yeah, that's what's going on with iPad.
Well, I think Steve Jobs is probably rolling over in his grave at the words enterprise and iPad being used in the same sentence. But, okay, so that's interesting because clearly Apple's best skill is design, right? Or at least it's perceived that way. I personally think the user experience on an iPad and an iPhone haven't grown or changed in years, and it's been surpassed by Android. But the perception among most people is that Apple's user experience, user design, is the best in the world. So it makes total sense that they would want to pass these skills on to other companies who are designing apps for their ecosystem. I think that's great. But is that the reason the iPad is declining, or is it because phone screens are getting bigger because the PC industry is responding with all-in-ones and convertibles and other kinds of products, not to mention the iWatch as another reason why the iPad may not be as useful? Kelly, what do you think? Is it just a matter of a lack of enterprise apps, or is it just something with this form factor that's just not going to work out?
I think it's the form factor, absolutely. I think creating apps that would lend themselves to certain business audiences, like retail workers or people who have to be on the go all the time, I think that could be helpful. And I think that could make people want an iPad. But in terms of broader tablet use, I think other form factors are more useful. Employees, if they need a computer, they don't want an iPad. They need like a laptop or a desktop or something more substantial. I think there are very few employees or people in general who find that they actually need an iPad for everyday use. I've never felt the need to have one. I don't know a lot of people who do. So I feel like it's more of a nice to have than a must have. And then on top of that, there's been very little innovation in the tablet space. So people who have one don't find the need to upgrade or get the next latest model because there's very little difference when it comes down to it.
Right. Well, I have to ask you one really quick question before I turn to Sarah, because I think Sarah will give us some interesting insight on this as well. But I need to ask you, as the Microsoft person, is iPad also suffering because the Surface is winning in the enterprise, or is that just a dream that Satya Nadella had and isn't actually true?
I've used both, and I find the Surface more useful. I really like the Surface because you can take the keyboard off or use it or whatever. But I do think it's interesting that Apple is jumping into this space, creating enterprise services that Microsoft has dominated for so long. And now you have Microsoft creating Microsoft Office apps for iOS, so people can use Microsoft Word and Microsoft PowerPoint on their iPhones and on their iPads. So it makes me wonder, like, does Apple have the culture and the insight to compete with that? You know, because people have relied on Microsoft software for so long.
Right. Well, it's very funny to think of Apple as potentially following Microsoft into something for a change. Sarah, you're our security expert. And one thing that I've always wondered about tablets in an enterprise setting is the security aspect of it. When mobile first came around, it was thought of as more secure because it was designed differently and blah, blah, blah. But as the target has become juicier, we're starting to see a lot of ways that which mobile can be exploited, just like a desktop. Are tablets inherently more or less secure, and would that change in your mind how much a tablet is used in business?
I think that, well, my personal thought is that they're inherently less secure, but I do think that not necessarily everybody would agree with me on that, but I think that I did speak to a chief information security officer at the Black Hat conference last week who told me that she does expect that within the next few years, that tablets will eventually start replacing laptops in her company. She thinks it will happen, but it hasn't really happened yet. And security is kind of part of that, but not really the principal reason that it prevented that from happening. You know, the thing with tablets is partly that there weren't really security products for them. It was so you could have plenty of the malware writers writing all kinds of nasty stuff for them, but your antivirus products and all of your other security products weren't compatible, so they couldn't see what's going on all of those tablets and all the other mobile devices. That's always been part of the problem, is that you can't control what's going on them. And mobile device management software is one of the key tools that security professionals use to manage both their mobile phones and also tablets, but it's kind of limited in what it can do. And there are some new solutions out there, but a lot of them don't cover both Android and iOS at the same time. So sometimes you need to kind of use a bunch of different tools, and some of them are overly restrictive. So you kind of, the solutions just aren't really there yet. So it's partly a matter of just not being able to secure them as well as you could secure the rest of the gear you've got.
Right. Is it also true that just because an employee can just leave it somewhere, like you're always just going to have a vulnerability that is not going to be true with a giant desktop that you're not going to carry?
Absolutely.
Around.
I mean, but, and that's the same thing that was a concern with laptops. I mean, that's absolutely
right.
been something that we've already been used to with laptops. Lost devices is still the biggest concern with mobile security. Lost devices is still like the major thing people worry about, because there still hasn't been a big, huge breach that has come through like mobile malware. That hasn't really happened yet, but people still lose devices all the time.
Right. So the CISO you spoke to at Black Hat was it her opinion that the reason the tablets were going to grow is because the solutions are going to become more available in the next few years, or was she feeling pressure to just deploy them anyway for other reasons?
I think she felt that. I can't recall the exactly how she put it, but I think she felt that the products were going to evolve and that the demand was going to increase, and she didn't seem she seemed kind of hopeful about the whole thing.
Good. Well, I always like it when we're hopeful. The word hopeful triggered for me the reality that we haven't talked yet about anything that you are an expert on that will dash all of our hopes for a secure world.
Yeah.
So tell me, what was the biggest story in security this week?
Well, I think the past couple weeks, what we've been hearing a lot about again is car hacking. So this week we heard that at the USENIX conference, there were some researchers from the University of California, San Diego, who were able to use text messages. They text messaged a dongle used by certain insurance companies that charge insurance on a per mile basis. You put this dongle in your car, and I guess it tracks how many miles you're going. And he sent a text message to it, and by doing that, could take control of the brakes and either just disable the brakes.
So
turn the windshield wipers on and off,
too,
but also disable the brakes. And that was, they were able to do that in a Corvette. And then last week, the news actually broke the week before the Black Hat briefings, but the full research was shown at the Black Hat briefings last week. Some other researchers who have done some work on car hacking in the past showed how they were able to take over the braking, steering, the door locks, they were able to kill the engine, do all kinds of stuff to a 2014 Jeep Cherokee by hacking into the infotainment system. I hate the word infotainment. Every time I have to say it, it makes me want to cringe. But they were able to do that from many, many miles away by getting into the cellular connection. So again, you know, there's some ports being left open. It's this entire insecurity of these Internet of Things devices being put into the cars, why they have so much connection to the mechanics of the vehicles is beyond me. But
right.
The positive thing about this, that what we can take from it at least, is that when researchers were first finding vulnerabilities in vehicles, they were getting no response from the manufacturers. They were really just kind of getting ignored. But a couple weeks ago, when Chris Vlasic and Charlie Miller told Fiat Chrysler of this research into the what they'd found with the Jeep Cherokee, that they had been able to remotely hack it and
Right. Did I lose you there, Sarah? Hello? Well, I think we may have lost Sarah there.
Yeah, we might have.
Kelly, you're still here?
Yep, I'm still here.
Okay, good. Well, I'm sorry we lost Sarah. I hope we can get her back. But I have to say, while we're hopefully looking for Sarah, that frightens me a lot. It also makes me wonder why in the world there isn't some sort of obvious gap between the engine's computer and other computers. But let me ask you, Kelly, because I know Microsoft is extremely interested in the Internet of Things, and it's also extremely, I know at one point it had a deal with Ford to run the infotainment systems inside Ford vehicles. I don't know if they still do, but they did for a while. Has Microsoft made any statements about the security or safety of vehicles that they're a part of?
Not that I know of. So far as I know, they haven't spoken to that topic. But I have to say, it's absolutely terrifying. And if they would like to pursue that, then this is definitely something they should be paying attention to. I mean, it's one thing for your phone to get hacked and someone hacked into your personal information. That's terrible, but it doesn't physically harm you. If someone hacks into your car and slams on the brakes, you know, anything could happen. So I feel like it's shocking that the car manufacturers weren't giving more of a response, because I feel like this is a huge red flag.
Right, obviously. And it probably took somebody to show the car stopping like that to get their attention, but it shouldn't have had to have. The thing that is interesting to me about this, besides the obvious, oh my God, anybody can stop my car, this is a perfect example of how the Internet of Things is creating new attack vectors, because we're not redesigning from scratch. What we're doing is that we're putting the Internet of Things connection on top of an existing product. And to me, unfortunately, that's exactly what Microsoft's business plan seems to be all about. Is that a fair thing to say? That Microsoft is sort of just trying to put software on top of an existing hardware product? Is that their business plan?
And it's hard to tell, because they just introduced the Windows 10 Internet of Things core this week. It's kind of like a trimmed down version of the Windows 10 OS for Internet of Things devices. They cited Raspberry Pi as an example, but they didn't go into too many details on what the different Internet of Things devices that Windows 10 will run on. So I think it's more like the software exists. I think Microsoft is coming out with different devices over the next few months, and some will connect to the Internet of Things, some won't. So I think it's safe to say that the hardware doesn't exist yet, but it's hard to tell whether they're going to take the same precautions that they should be taking. Like, are they paying enough attention to announcements like this and, like, really going the extra mile to make sure that those devices are secure when they all are interconnected? Because you're right,
right,
to just, like, slap the software on top of an existing device, like, it's not wired for it. Like, it's easy to break into those things.
Exactly. So I think we may have Sarah back. Sarah, are you there? Can you hear me?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Hey.
Yay.
Well, I'm sorry about that technical difficulty, anybody who's listening, and also Sarah. We were talking while we were trying to get you back. I don't know if you were able to hear, but I was suggesting that one of the difficulties with so much Internet of Things security is that I feel like what we're doing is we're slapping IoT connections on top of existing products rather than designing them from scratch. Is that a fair thing to say about IoT security, or am I just in the woods on this?
Yeah, no, I think it is fair to say, and I think part of the problem is also that you've got all of these
manufacturers who have never built, really haven't built electronics before,
right,
who are suddenly being thrust into this. You know, this embedded firmware was not a thing that they had to think about before. The good news is that the Online Trust Alliance has an Internet of Things working group, and just this week actually has released a framework for Internet of Things security. So hopefully people will pay attention to that and start thinking about it as they're releasing new home security systems and all of that other good stuff.
Great. Well,
because
I'm
it's
looking
definitely
forward to
an
talking,
issue.
Right. I'm looking forward to talking to you more about this in the next few weeks. I know both you and Kelly, however, have other things to do than talk to me. So real quick, Sarah, can you tell us what you've got coming up for the next week and where people can find you and all your fun information?
Well, you can always find me on Twitter at Sarah Peters. It's just S-A-R-A-P-E-T-E-R-S. And over the next several weeks, we're going to be rolling out all the video from the dark reading news desk that we had at Black Hat. So it's about 30 interviews we did with all of the speakers and trainers from there. So that's lots of good stuff that'll be rolling out over the next few weeks.
Sounds good. Well, I had the pleasure of being with you on the Interop news desk, and it was so much fun. So I expect all of that video from Dark Reading and Black Hat to be just as good. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Yeah, and Kelly, what's coming up for you this week, and where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Kelly Sheridan, K-E-L-L-Y-S-H-E-R-I-D-A-N 22. And next week, I will continue watching Microsoft News and trying to stay as current on that as possible. And I think I'm also trying to get another diversity-related story in the works. I like keeping an eye on the progress of women and minorities in IT. And I had a really interesting conversation last week with someone at Bank of America who had some really great insight on that. So keep an eye out for that over the next few days.
Well, fantastic. You know, obviously, we love to have that at IT Life, so we're looking forward to it. For me, if you're tired of hearing me and you're looking forward to Kirk Franklin coming back, he will be back next Friday at this time. He'll be back from his lovely vacation. If you are enjoying hearing me talk, you can see more of me on Information Week, and you can follow me at GeekandDave on Twitter. And that leaves me to just thank everybody for tuning in today and to thank my guests, Sarah and Kelly. This has been Information Week Live for the week of August 9th, 2015. Have a great weekend.